Our next speaker is Lee Watanabe Crockett, and Lee's coming to us today from Japan. There is much that you can read about Lee in terms of his background and his bio, but I think it's significant to just state that Lee is an author, he's a speaker, he's a designer, but above all, he's a highly creative person, highly creative, and has explored his interest in painting, in music, in the martial arts, in philosophy, whilst also constantly focusing on the opportunities that can actually exist for us in the nexus that sits between technology and learning. So we welcome Lee to our conference today, and we very much look forward to your insights that you'll be sharing with us. Thank you so much, Lee.
Well, thank you very much, Anne. It's a great pleasure to be with ASL again. I believe this is the fourth time now that I've keynoted at ASL, and certainly, you know, Australia is very close to my heart, and very close to me actually in time zone. I'm sitting here in Japan right now, and was speaking with clients earlier today, and I want to share a bunch of things with you. We have 20 minutes. I'm going to do my best to compress my thinking for you. This is where I was yesterday. I train at a Zen temple here in Kamakura, the oldest Zen temple in Japan, actually. And it's a place to give me pause, give me a chance to think and focus my thoughts. And I have this question that I would like you to have your mind on as we wander through this session, which is, if you knew for certain you would succeed, what is it that you would do? What would you do if you knew for certain you'd be successful? And I want to share some slides with you from my very first ASL keynote 10 years ago. I dusted them off virtually to have a look at them. And 10 years ago, I talked about this, about the digital disruption having occurred. And at that time, we talked about things like the world's most popular media provider creates no content, you know, Facebook, or the world's largest software vendors don't even write the applications, that the largest phone companies don't own any telecommunications infrastructure, or that the world's largest movie house doesn't own any cinemas, or that the world's largest accommodation provider doesn't own any real estate. The world's largest taxi company doesn't even own any taxis. These are shocking things for us to think of. Also shocking to note that the US is still using floppy disks to run its nuclear program, just to help to keep things in perspective. But these are all disruptive innovations, and disruptive innovations are things that happen in industry that completely transform and disrupt an existing norm. So I remember in the 80s, I had an album from my favorite band. And if you don't know who this band is, that's your homework today, because that's another great Canadian group. And then, of course, a few years later, I had to replace all of my music with this. We had a little sideways time when we made mixtapes, and that never worked out too well. But then when we had to replace our music again for the third or fourth time, and then eventually we did it this way, and now that's even gone. Now, each one of these things were an innovation that completely disrupted the market and replaced an existing paradigm. That's why you don't find these anymore. That's why you don't find these anymore. And the reason is simply this. Nobody needs obsolete excellence. It doesn't matter how good you are at something that is irrelevant today. And it's not personal. It's just a fact of disruptive innovation. Schools, largely today, resemble schools from 100 years ago. There's very little differences as far as the structure, the thinking, the paradigms around them. They were designed as information delivery systems, a way to cultivate experts in one area that would then pass on that thinking. Now, if we just continue to be unaware that things have changed or unwilling or unable to respond to these changes, we'll be undone by them. And that was my message a decade ago. So, you know, here we are now, really, really faced with the truth around this. And so what does it mean to transcend? Why are some of my clients in 20 countries absolutely thriving while others are struggling? Let's go back to this place. So 800, 1,000 years of training of Zazen. You know, how do you transcend that when all of a sudden nobody's working together anymore? Nobody's physically in the same place. Well, even temples that are nearly 1,000 years of old have completely transcended. So this is my friend Daigo Ozawa, who's the head priest of Tokuzenji. And in our online community, he holds online Zazen. We train people from 100 countries and he does it online. We've brought people together in ways that we never thought possible. Even me as a company, the way that we've transcended what we do. So we looked at it and we said, well, what if we took all of the most relevant topics the most innovative accredited master classes that we could put together, the best articles and resources, and then a whole group of master teachers from 20 countries. What if I put those all together into one place to see what would happen? And that's what we did. We created a global professional learning community where I have people thriving, and the amount of quality work that's happening in there actually is shaming me. I'm looking at it thinking, what have I been doing for the last decade that the work that's happening here with teachers connecting in the schools that I work with in different parts of Australia and then connecting to others in Dubai and other countries, it's so good. Why was I not doing this? So I want to tell you the elements that have made those schools successful. The first is, coming into this pandemic, coming into this time of uncertainty, we had five agreements. And those five agreements were to try new things, to stay curious, to constantly reframe, to ask for ideas and feedback, and most importantly, to trust this process. And so let me start with the first one, reframe, 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 because if ever there was something we needed, it's this. It means moving our thinking. It means taking questions and statements and moving them to new possibilities. So instead of the response of we're too tired and stressed to take on anything new until term one, term two, term three, you name it, there's never a good time. Let's reframe that to a question. How can we balance well-being while taking the first footsteps forward? That would be reframing. So if we constantly turn statements into questions, we create new possibilities. This is what it means to reframe. The second thing that we ask them to do is to stay curious. In a time of fundamental uncertainty, and you know, from a Zen perspective, I could just talk about the fact that it's always been fundamental uncertainty and that's never going to change, but I'll avoid that conversation. But let me just share with you some of the data, because I know how much everyone that's an ASL member loves data. Here's some interesting things from some interesting studies for you. So how has Australia adopted to remote learning protocols? 1/3 of Australians are holding fewer meetings. 51% say productivity has increased under new protocols. 1/3 of Australians are working earlier in the day, and then 42% of them, the ones that are homeschooling, are starting much earlier in the day. But here's some other interesting facts around this. So 80% of people say they miss catching up with their teammates on a daily basis. That basically means they're missing morning tea. That's what it is. However, half of them, 54%, say they would like to continue working remotely even when their physical offices open. Now, these are Australian numbers. So you need to be aware of this. Schools need to be aware of this, and I'll come back to it in a moment. What happened for us, the largest, before I do that, here's two more interesting numbers. 40% feel more connected to their managers, and 76% say their managers are better in supporting them and communicating them than before. These numbers have carried across to the schools that we've surveyed as well. It's very, very interesting. The largest global unplanned social experiment of 1.5 billion children happened over a period of about 2 weeks. We just said, hey, we're done. Everyone go home. And none of us were really prepared for it. Now, here's the thing. People are starting to come back. Dubai hasn't and has no plans to, because they recognize that remote learning is working. But out of our global workforce, they're now set up to work from home, and 47% say they want to continue. What does that mean? It means that we are never going back. So the conversation about, well, as soon as things go back, or as soon as the kids come back, as soon as, it's never happening. We have a new normal. We have a new reality. And we have the opportunity now to step forward into that in exciting ways. So my clients in WA that have said, oh, well, we dodged the bullet. Well, no, you didn't, because nothing's going back to the way it was. And now if people want to stay at home and they want to keep their kids at home, what does that mean? Here's what disruptive innovation tells us. Firstly, we need to understand that these are disruptive times for education. And second is that the continued existence of the current system is not assured. Good organizations with good people will disappear if they don't understand the natural laws of disruptive innovations. And it's very difficult for successful organizations to become dominant players in the new market. That's what happened to Borders. That's what happened to Blockbuster. That's what happened to Kodak. The reason is not that they weren't good. It's that they were good at something that was now obsolete. And we have to find a way to move forward to transform what we're doing. That brings us to the third of the agreements that I investigated with my clients, which was to try new things. If education is to have a purpose and a future, we have to agree that dissemination of information is no longer the role of the teacher. It hasn't been for a long time, but it must stop being. So schools were designed around this model of one teacher delivering to many children. In actuality, they're only directly dealing with one. The fact is that all of those learners are unique, and we forget this in all of our models, that every child is unique. We don't have 30 of the same. We have 30 of completely different. So when we're presenting to that one or optimizing for that one learner, we're actually getting a certain percentage of them to a relative degrees, but then we have some that you know really do well in that, and then we have some that we completely miss. And that's because the flaw in this model of one teacher to many learners. And what we need to do is invert the model. We need to move to one learner to many teachers. And so that means looking at a system that involves not just a single teacher or not just human teachers or not teachers from a single space or from a specific time or not in a specific location or not in a certain method. We have to find new ways to do this. Now, school in its paradigm, when remote learning first started to happen, said, well, we're just going to find a way to do what we've always done. And that largely meant this. I mean, in a few months, Zoom went from 10 million to 300 million users. All of a sudden, everyone has done what my company's done for a decade. We don't work in a physical location. I've always been a remote company. And we don't hold meetings and we don't use email. That's a whole other conversation around how we do that. But this is a problem for us, this desire to do synchronous. And it's a problem because our brain's working memory means we can only take in so many things at one time. And we actually are struggling with a real cognitive overload. Meeting online increases our cognitive load. It takes up such a lot of capacity. It uses a lot of energy. And as a result, we're tired. And our kids are tired too. If we go back to the SAMR model, what we've done is we've done substitution. We've said, well, let's just find a way to talk to children in a physical location, except now it'll be a virtual location. That's substitution. When we start to move to redefining what the tool can do, that's when we start to move to asynchronous learning. And what we're finding is a lot of depth happening there. Now, here's the thing that we forget. We need to stop remote teaching because you can't compete with knowledge delivery systems that are so much better than we are. But embrace remote learning because our learners already know how to do this. They know how to learn anything they want to. They just don't want to learn the things that we want them to learn in the way and in the time that we want them to learn it. So we need to find a way to do this in a different manner. And so one of our innovations was to create a product that allows us to do that, where we have evidence-based remote and blended learning tied to Australian achievement standards and schools working completely asynchronously. The schools that we work with have really thrived in this. And it was about creating a system of clarity. And clarity is about that lucidity of perception and understanding, you know, not having any ambiguity, but really understanding what is it we're doing and what does it look like. And so how we've been able to do this is to really focus on a couple of domains with schools. We focused on these different three domains of clarity. The first was awareness, about unifying and empowering the team with a clarity of purpose, plan, and responsibility. What are we doing it? Who's doing it? How is it happening? In what manners? In what department? What do the learners need to do? This is all about learning intentions and being clear, and all of that process is all about awareness. Then the second aspect of this came in when we started to look at systems and processes. What if we had a single source of truth, a place that all of the information for the organization is in one place where we can have that conversation? For us, that became in many ways the Zen app for schools. That became their single source of truth. Here's where all of the data is. Here's where all of the evidence is. All of the protocols are in that place. And the third and most important part of this was authentic connections, which means communication aligned to purpose, plan, and mission, and then to facilitate success and to enhance a human connection. Not meeting because we should be meeting, because meeting is what we do, but asking ourselves, is there actually a reason for it? Or can we do this asynchronously in a better way than we've done it previously? All of this meant that we took our two systems, our Wabi Sabi Learning Community, our global professional learning community, and then our Wabi Sabi Zen app, and created ways that allowed teachers and allowed schools to continue and to actually accelerate in what they're doing. What I found is that most of my clients are saying to me, we actually don't want to go back, and we're concerned about how far learning will step back if we do. And they're now asking themselves actively, how do we continue to do the great things that we've been doing and bring that back into the live conversation? So before the beginning of this presentation, I asked you, I mentioned about disruptive innovation, and I talked about things that are just changing and that we're not going back. I said if we were unaware, unwilling, and unable to respond to change, that we'll be undone by it. And so Kodak is a perfect example of that. It's not that they were unaware that change was happening. It's that they just couldn't figure out how to move away from paper. And if the question for Kodak had not been, how do we get people to continue to use paper, but if the question had been, how do we participate in the business of memories, they might have been able to adapt. And that's what we need to do with schools. Schools need to as well say, what is our core business and how do we transform what we're doing? So my job in 15 to 20 minutes was try to take you from zero to infinity, really, to help you to understand that there's a huge opportunity, that a lot of people are being very successful in this, and to detail exactly how they're being successful. At the same time, share with you how we've transformed and how others have transformed. So now it's no longer a question of awareness, because I would say now you are aware. The question now comes down to willingness. Are you willing to have the courage to make the shifts that you need to do in school? So where is it that you're going? What's that going to look like in the end? Well, I asked you at the very beginning of this conversation, if you knew for certain that you would succeed, what would you do? And now I would say to you, that's your destination. Let's look at what that is. And then let's ask ourselves, how can we get there? How can we help you with that? We've created two solutions for that, a global professional learning community and as an evidence-based remote and blended learning system for schools. I'm making them free to any school in Australia that wants them for the next 6 months. All you have to do is email me, and I'm happy to set you up. We have schools in every state that we're working with that are sharing best practices and accelerating. My focus is on the future, not on the past. We're not going back, so how do we go forward? And this is how we can support you and how we can help you and how we've been helping your colleagues. I'm happy to share with you and answer any questions that you have now or after this session around how has that transformation happened? What's gone on in the last 6 months in the dark period where you haven't seen me as much that has allowed us to really transform things? Contact me. I'm happy to have that conversation with you. I'm happy to demo the products to you and show you what success really, really looks like. And so really, that's everything I have to share with you today. I wanted to make sure that I left a lot of time to answer your questions, because ultimately that's the thing that matters most to me. So Anne, what do you have for us?
Well, there's a range of things. One of the things, Lee, and you've done a wonderful job to take us from zero to infinity in 15 to 20 minutes. But if we come from a point sometimes of being unaware, unwilling, unable, and therefore potentially run the risk of being undone, there's a great impetus for change when you're in the midst of a crisis. But what are the ways to actually be sustaining this focus beyond the immediate situations that we confront when we're dealing with change?
Yeah, I can't come back to the five agreements enough as being something that's really essential. Staying curious is a big part of it, but reframing. And I do this in my organization all the time. Kathleen Baker-Brown, who's the director for Wabi Sabi in Australia, she and I have conversations all the time. And we're constantly catching each other and saying, okay, there wasn't a question there. So could you reframe that? How would we turn that into something different? Because when we make statements and those statements are permanent. So when I say there is no time, we have too much to do, there is too much stress, our teachers are burdened, those are not facts. They're not negotiable. There's nowhere I can go with that. So what we need to do is we need to have the courage to reframe, to say, well, given that people are stressed, how do we continue to move forward? That's reframing. That's opening up and creating a possibility. Some would call it growth mindset. For me, it's about creating possibilities where there were none. And so if it has a period at the end of it, that means it's definite. If there's a question mark at the end of it, it means we can create something. Reframing is an incredibly powerful tool for that.
If we were to think about that in the context of leadership, Lee, it's quite interesting. When we were framing 10 years ago our standard for principalship that was guiding the development of school leadership here in Australia, we focused not on an area of managing change, but on leading improvement, innovation and change. What's troubling is that sometimes people are seeing innovation as being creativity as a domain of some, not as a domain of everyone, but it sits at the heart of improved practice. What would be some of the ways that you'd see as being key enablers for leaders to really be unleashing creativity and new ways of thinking?
So again, there's a couple of things with that that are really important. The first is questioning. When people come to us with questions as leaders, what we need to do is we need to turn that back and say, well, that's a great question. Let's talk about that. I have some questions for you about that, or put the question back to the person. It's exactly what we do with learners. We want to move the thinking back to them. And that's the best way for us to enable our junior leaders is by asking them questions. And when they ask us questions, not to have answers, but to have questions. That's really the best way to accomplish that. But there needs to be an understanding that there is no such thing as permanence. I mean, that's part of Zen training, is understanding that there is no such thing as permanence. Everything is constantly in change. Our struggle comes not with innovation, but in trying to prevent change from happening. If we just understand that everything is impermanent, that we are in a constant state of change, that's what wabi-sabi actually means. It means to understand that nothing's perfect, nothing's permanent, and that because of that, everything is going to change. So we constantly have to be looking at it this way. The thing that I tell all my clients, Dan, is this: there is no such thing as best practice, period. There's only evolving practice. So the question is not, are we doing good or bad, or which is the better one? The question is, how do we take the excellent work that's happening in schools in Australia and turn that into transformational? How do we continue to do better? Because none of it was perfect to begin with. And that becomes a mindset of evolving practice. And that's why we call it practice, right? We're constantly improving it.
Mm. That's great, Lee. I'm just looking at a number of the questions that have come through from people, and there's a theme here that's emerging which has to do with student wellbeing, and also one that has to do with teacher wellbeing. So in essence, as you're moving towards a blended learning approach or thrust into a blended learning approach, what things do we need to be aware of in terms of student learning, and also what things do we need to be aware of in terms of teacher learning?
Yeah, I'm really glad you asked that question, because it's such an, you know, it's such an important focus for me. Here's what I would tell you that we've seen happen. We have seen deeper practice happen. We have seen deeper connection happen. We've seen people better than they've been. You know, their well-being has improved, and it's become because of authentic conversations. It comes back to, why are we talking, and what is that conversation about? If we're looking at that clarity of purpose, plan, and responsibility, we're communicating authentically with learners around what their learning is and what it is that they need to do to be successful, as opposed to drip feeding content. So we're building their capacity to be well because they learn to trust themselves, and they have that opportunity to come back with questions and to have deeper conversations. That depth of conversation is the most important thing we can do with learners, is take the time that we normally do synchronous talking at delivering content and stop doing that. We should never deliver content ever again in a synchronous manner. I don't even do it anymore in a synchronous manner. So for me, when you do my master classes, all of those are recorded, and they're recorded so you can look at them in your own time and in your own way. But when we do have synchronous time, it's for deep and meaningful conversation like this. That's how you'll improve well-being, to know that people care, to know that people matter, and to know that they're heard. And that's really, really an important aspect of how we make both teachers and learners well.
Mm. One of the themes that is also coming through is that theme of equity of engagement, equity of opportunity. There's some comments that you'd like to make in relation to the blended learning environments and equity, and the way that we can ensure that we're really getting the most from all of our students?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot that we could talk about, and certainly there's parts of the world I work in where equity is a huge issue. And we say, find a quiet place in the house with my 9 sisters. Like, where am I going to find a quiet spot? You know, there's certainly a challenge around that. But what we need to firstly do is step back and recognize that it has never been equitable. We had an illusion of all of these things. And really, our school environments have created that kind of illusion. So it's not that all of a sudden things aren't equitable, it's that they never were. And so that means that we have to stop looking at this, well, classes are different, so we need to try to make them all the same, and let's get all of this happening in a certain way. We need to understand that every learner is different and always has been. Therefore, we need to design and invert the process, and the learning has to come from the bottom up. It means that every child needs to be taken care of in a way that's appropriate for that child. That's what equity is about. There's a difference to me between equity and what I really look for is justice. Like, what is the best and the fairest for each child? That means needs are different. Equity is largely about making sure everyone has the same. Justice is about making sure that the people that need what they need get what they need. And that means we just got to revisit what this whole process looks like.
And I think that was what Parsi, one of our earlier speakers today, was referring to when he was saying that what needed to be occurring was a definition of what equity was, and coming once again back to that moral purpose of what it is we want to achieve for every learner, and to have the hopes and the opportunity to be experiencing and fulfilling and learning in a way that they can achieve their hopes and dreams for the future.
It means an individualized learning plan for every learner. That's what has always been required. And that means that we need to shift from teaching to learn. I'm not so interested in teaching, but I'm highly interested in learning. That's really the area that matters to me. So how do we do that in a way that's unique to each child, that allows each child to experience what's best for them in an appropriate time and in an appropriate way? That's the element of inverting learning so that one learner has many teachers and that they're not all physical or they're not all human even.
Or as a friend of mine once said, an opportunity for everyone to leave school and to have the students a tad more exhausted than the teachers, and not the reverse.
always my goal, to have teachers work less and students work more.
Yeah. Lee, are there any final comments or pieces of advice that you'd like to leave people with today as we conclude this session? We're all leaders in different spheres of influence. What would be one golden piece of advice that you'd like to leave with us today?
The thing that I really am stressing to my clients and to everyone that I have the opportunity to speak with is, we have to look forward. We cannot continue to say when this changes or when that changes or when this goes back. We have to recognize that we must move forward. Now, it doesn't matter how quickly we move forward, but our eyes have to be on possibility and opportunity. We have to go back to what our strategic plans were. And then we have to remind ourselves, what is it that we want learning to look like? And what is the next step that I need to take? We need to focus on the future now and get our eyes past crisis.